All right. Okay. Welcome, everybody, to another edition of the First New Battalion Chief. I'm Danny Sheridan. I'm a battalion chief in the New York City Fire Department, and tonight I have some very cool guests. We're going to have a really – I think this is going to be a really good show because there's some really powerful stuff going on here. So tonight we're going to discuss NFPA 1403 and live burns, and with me I have two firefighters that work as volunteers. One in Connecticut. I'm not sure where Aiden is, but I'll let him introduce himself. I have Sean Gray from Cobbs County, UL, and we're waiting on one other guest. So without further ado, I will let everybody just go around and introduce themselves. But first, Aiden. Aiden, you want to introduce yourself?
Yeah, my name is Aiden Stephan. I'm currently only just a volunteer in Kent County, Delaware. Only been doing it for roughly 4 years. I was always involved as fire department as a kid, of course, fire trucks, boys, interchange kids. I decided to stick with it. Been through a whole bunch of classes, all a couple of NFPA classes. So decided to stick with it. I'm pretty much all I got. I don't have anything else that special about me.
Yeah. Well, don't say that. I know that somehow we're connected through my daughter's boyfriend. He mentioned to me that he met you or something, and one thing led to another, and he said that you were involved in some kind of incident, and we're going to get to that in a bit. So we'll shelve that for a second. I want to introduce my good friend Carl. Carl, you want to introduce yourself?
Sure, thank you. My name is Carl Neubecker. I'm currently the assistant chief in the Ellington Fire Department, which is outside of Hartford, Connecticut. I've served in two different volunteer departments, one in New York and one in Connecticut, over the last 25 years. And I just was promoted to assistant chief. My previous position was the training chief for the department, so I have about 10 years of experience with live burns and running the program, essentially.
You do some job, Carl. And you got an award last year, too. Wasn't it some kind of national recognition award?
Yes, thank you for mentioning. But I won the Training Officer of the Year award through the IAFC, correct?
Yeah, not too shabby, right?
No. Oh, thank you.
All right, very good. And next is Sean Gray. Sean, I met, I don't know how many years ago, in FDIC. Sean, you want to introduce yourself?
Yeah, so I think we met, it's probably been 12 years ago or so at FDIC, but my name's Sean Gray. I'm a fire captain in Cobb County, Georgia, which is a Metro Atlanta career agency. We have about 800 members or so, 30 fire stations, all that kind of stuff. So I've been in the fire service since 93, so I guess I'm old now, going on 30 years, and I've been involved with Underwriter Laboratories, UL, Firefighter Safety Research Institute for about 10 years, and I sit on the 1403 committee. So I think we're going to have a good discussion, talk about live fire stuff.
Yeah. And I also understand you're an avid scooter.
I'm famous for my scooter incident. Yep. So I wrecked a scooter at FDIC this year. Spent 5 days in the hospital and got a chest tube and all that kind of stuff. So, yeah. So, I'm an expert scooter stuntman.
I had to throw that in, Sean. So,
I love it.
Yeah. So, anyway, and I guess we're missing one guest, and if he shows up, we'll let him introduce himself. So, anyway, so the reason I brought you all together was my daughter's boyfriend, Chris, mentioned that Sean was involved in an incident in a live fire. And when I heard it, I got a chill. I was like, wow. I know that firsthand. I know what that's like. And Carl and I were both involved in that. And I posted the video today on Instagram. I think it's on Twitter, Facebook, or whatever. And if you saw it, I could tell you that's one of the most frightening moments that can happen on the fire ground is a flashover or a backdraft. So we're going to talk a little bit about 1403 and how I became a big fan of it. I wasn't always a big fan of 1403. I was a little bit of a renegade, I hate to say, but I'll admit my sins because I almost learned the hard way. But anyway, Aiden, so you're a volunteer firefighter. I saw you did a little burn in a house. And
yes,
it didn't go so well. So
Yeah, so I'm not exactly sure how other states been. I've never actually done any fire services outside of Delaware. But every once in a while, departments can apply for burn permits to the Department of Natural Resources. They'll let you burn a house as long as it's, like, it was for demolition and everything. So we were fortunate enough. We had this huge farmhouse. Half our district, we're very, like, suburban district. We don't really have any. Delaware's pretty flat. Have you ever been here? No buildings over five stories here. But it was a nice farmhouse. It was like an eight-bedroom, huge, just old ranch-style farmhouse. We went through it, obviously, months before, kind of distinguishing, oh, this room's good to burn. This room may not be good. It's not so structurally sound. So we did all the preparation beforehand. We had a good game plan what we wanted to do. And it actually ended up going pretty well. I know from our department, at least, we had probably 15 to 18 members. And we also, we love treating our other mutual aid departments to great training opportunities as well. So we have Air Force Base firefighters right next to us. We have some, like Delaware Fire Department and a couple other surrounding companies that were invited to come out to this huge farmhouse to kind of just have a day, have a good learning experience. So like I said, majority of the day went well. It was just kind of one fire at a time for safety reasons, obviously. We'd light one fire, we'd let a crew go in, we'd let an engine crew and a ladder crew or a special service crew go in and kind of just practice what it would be like. Obviously, just try and gain experience, throw some new guys in there. The whole day went great. We were pretty much close to the last burn, and we were slated, we were told to burn the house down anyway. They say Delaware wanted us to burn down, so they were going to demolish it anyway. The last burn, of course, the stokers in there, all experienced firemen from up in Newcastle County, Delaware. They wanted to make it a good time. May have been not necessarily a good idea in hindsight. So it was one last room. It was roughly probably a 10 by 20 room. It was a pretty, it was like a detached in-law suite type of thing. Had a little separate bathroom. They had it going. I was on the last fire of the day just because everyone else was beat, and I was eager to get more hand line time. So, because still as like a somewhat younger guy, everything was going well. I was just waiting for the green light for them to go. I'm not exactly sure which video. Did you post the video of the exterior or the one of the GoPro footage?
Yeah, your the inside with your
okay.
Cam.
Yep.
I'll post the other one tomorrow.
You know, I was just curious. I didn't see the video, which one you posted. Yeah, so if you saw the start of the video, I was just kind of waiting there. Obviously, it's just a training environment. It's kind of just, hey, we'll light the fire. We'll let it go for a little bit. We don't want to just light one bale of hay and then go and put it out. You want to let it get a little hot in there so you get the most realistic as possible. So we wait, and what we kind of figured out at the time was it got too hot in the room, and there was actually two exits. There was the one exit where in the video I was going through, and then there was another exit in the external video that if you post, you'll be able to see the other door. I was unaware that they'd opened the other door for the instructors to bail out. I was obviously unaware. It was kind of around the corner. I couldn't really hear what was going on. So I wasn't exactly expecting that. But as you could tell, as I walked up to the door, as soon as I opened the door, it kind of the room kind of flashed at that point. Fortunately, I wasn't necessarily in the room yet. I was kind of in the doorway, but it kind of turned into a blowtorch heading in my direction. It was a little close after putting out the fire, obviously. I didn't realize how close I was, but I came back. My mask was all crystallized from the heat, completely fogged over. At least for us, we have orange reflective bands on our gear. Like the entire front half of my gear is kind of all burned and charred. There's no reflective left. My hood was burned through to the last layer. I had one of the three-ply instructor hoods on just because we were burning all day. And it burned through the last layer, so I was very fortunate that I decided to do an instructor hood that day. Even the GoPro footage that I had, the case that I had on my GoPro melted pretty much half off, so kind of ruined that GoPro. That was kind of my experience. Fortunately enough, I was not injured at all, not even any burns in my ears or anything. I don't really know how to explain that, but it was a great learning experience because I was always a kid in the firehouse, always asking question after question after question, just annoying people. And one thing people it's hard to really tell somebody is when you need to get out of it. Like, if you're in a situation, how do you know when you need to get out? I would comfortably say I know, like, at what point I would need to exit a room now, which is a fortunate, unfortunate event. But besides that, that's about it.
So as I'm listening to Aiden, I know exactly what happened. I mean, the first time I was caught in a flashover was 1986, and I'll never forget it. It was only in a firehouse, probably about a month, and we had a job earlier in the night. It was right around the change of clothes. You know, it was a vacant building. The whole thing was going, and anyway, one of the guys went sick. Right? They call it going sick. He tapped out, whatever. And it was me and another probie, so they couldn't give either of us the roof because we were so brand new. So they gave the roof to an engine guy. And anyway, so maybe about 3 hours later, we're having dinner and we get another call, and it turns out it was a basement fire in a brownstone, right? And the roof firefighter decided to take the interior stairs to go get the roof, which is like an absolute no-no, right? Like, you know, we actually stress that in our books. The roof firefighter shall never take the interior stairs to get the roof, right? So it's a brownstone building, four stories high, including the basement. So myself and the other probie, Frank, we're with this very seasoned captain, this guy Tony Alva. And we're about 25 feet down the hallway, and he grabs us, and he says, "Get out." And we just looked at him like two deer in the headlights, you know. And he grabs us again. He says, "Get out." He grabs us, and he throws us, you know. And then as we're going down the hallway, the fire is chasing us out. And the fire just kind of blew over our heads. And what had happened was the OV didn't do anything wrong, the outside vent firefighter. He went and opened the back door to do a search. The fire was in the living room. And, you know, now – knowing what we know now, obviously he should have communicated that he was gonna vent. And when he did that, whatever couch was burning burst into like an inferno and chased us out. So that was the first flashover. And then Christmas, we had another one. And I've been involved in a few of them. And I have to tell you, they're frightening. They're frightening. And, you know, what I stress a lot when I talk about whatever I talk about when I do classes at FDIC or wherever, you know, I talk about coordinating ventilation, because I've been in more than I care to remember flashovers, like at least a half dozen that I can remember off the top of my head. And, you know, everything has to go right. So anyway, I did a lot of live burns, especially in South America, and I was very reckless because, you know what, it's South America, and I'm trying to teach these guys what it's like to go to a fire. And, Sean, you have to close your ears for a second because I didn't want to tell you what I was burning. But, you know, there were tires being burnt and gasoline and diesel. It was just like, you know, the only good thing is that we didn't use any structures that were, we call them type four. I guess it's type five, wood structures. They were all concrete, which is good, like little ovens. But I still had my fair share of near misses. But anyway, back in, I can't remember the year, I think I was a lieutenant, so it had to be before 9/11. It had to be like 1999, 2000, 2001. I'm not sure. I was still in 58 engine. A friend of mine lived in Westchester, and he asked me if I'd be interested in helping out with some live burns. And, you know, I said, yeah, absolutely, no problem. You know, and I came up with another guy, and we had a wooden house, and I don't know, I wasn't part of the igniting team. I was just like in charge of it, you know. And in hindsight, I'm really horrified at what happened. But I think I'm going to let Carl finish that story for me. So, Carl, I don't remember what year it was. Do you have any idea what year it was that we had that near miss?
Yeah, I would probably say we're talking 98 maybe. Maybe 99, somewhere in that area, I'd say. Yeah.
It had to be 99, yeah, because I was in 58 engine, and I didn't get to 58 engine until 99. So,
okay,
and I was with the
sense.
Lieutenant from 20 from 26 truck, so it had to be 99, right? And
gotcha.
I know that I know what I did wrong, and why don't you tell your story, because I'll try to kind of tell you my perspective, but I'm trying to see what you remember about the whole disaster.
Yeah, sure, no, of course. So I was pretty brand new at that point. I think I'd only been in for maybe a year or two. New York back in the day was not particularly good with certifications and getting people up to speed with really what they needed to be. Since then, New York has really kind of corrected their ways, and they're doing Firefighter 1 and 2. But back in the day, they kind of had their own program, which I think was not particularly good. The structure itself was, as Danny had said, it was a wooden structure. It was one of those ones you kind of read about because from the front, from the Alpha side, it was single story, but from the back, it sloped downward towards a lake, actually. So the basement was a finished part of the structure, and there was occupancy down there. Brand new, thought it was the coolest thing in the world that a couple guys from FDNY were here to instruct us, and basically we were doing live fire training. And I was in there, I believe we had gone in towards what was supposed to be the end of the day, and I know there was some talk about let's make this hot, let's show this guy's a good time, and I was totally on board with this. Similar to the story that Adrian told a minute ago, and basically it was a little too hot, a little too quick, and I had my first experience bailing out of a window, essentially. I was close to the front door, but got turned around, and thankfully, I think Danny and probably everybody else just started shouting to, get out, and I did that, and, it was on the transition towards the downhill slope, so it was about a half a story, so, no injuries, no problems coming out of it. And to be extremely honest, at the time, I thought it was the coolest thing ever. I really didn't understand the severity of the condition because of the training that I had at that point. And I kind of saw how bug-eyed everybody else was afterwards, or at least, certainly Danny and some of the more experienced guys. But I think that's kind of one of the crux of the issues here is you don't know until you know. And at that point, it may be too late. It's very hard, especially on a volunteer level or a smaller department level, to teach when things are going sideways and make that clear to people so they react quickly. So.
Well, I could tell you that the fellow that was with me, I know he was deeply impacted by that because, we both should know better, right? I could tell you that I still have it vividly in my mind how it all transpired, right? So I remember Steve was lighting the fires, right? God rest his soul.
Yep.
I love Steve.
Yeah.
He was igniting the fires. And I think he got a little aggressive. I thought, we had maybe a little bit too much diesel, maybe a little bit too much gasoline and whatever it was. And like you said, it was the end of the day, so the building's already warmed up. And, it was just a recipe for disaster. I know that it was kind of funny, right, because all the guys that were with me were chomping at the bit. They're like, when do we go? When do we go? I'm like, just – I'll let you know. Just relax.
Let
it build,
right.
let it build up a little bit. Like, I'll let you know. Believe me, So Steve comes to the window, and his eyes are like saucers, and he's like ready to dive out the window, right? And I'm like, okay, let's go. So we go in. I got in about 10 or 15 feet, and that's when it happened. It just flashed. And I knew exactly what happened. I never coordinated the vent in the back with the plywood that they had over the windows. And when we pushed in, it pushed out. And I can't imagine what they were seeing in the front, because what they saw in the front was that doorway was filled with fire. And I just remember, and this is a great piece of advice. I read this in an IAS report. Some poor kid, I forget the state. I don't even want to mention the state. But he got caught in a flashover. And it says, in the IAS report, it says he penciled the fire, right? And I'm thinking to myself, where in God's name did he learn that? Because I know where he learned it, because I've done flashover training. And because we don't want to reset the box, I use the can, or I used to just like kind of give it a little douche, like bang, bang, and it's like all about this muscle memory, right? So like we're associating now penciling with flashover, right? So in the poor kid, probably when he knew it was flashing, says, oh, I got to pencil this thing. And, it didn't end very well. But I know that what I did at that point, it's like these things happen and I had already been in a bunch of flashovers as a fireman, whether it was a 17 truck in the squad, so I saw it coming. And I was like, it's almost like your body goes into this denial. It's like, this isn't happening, And I'm like, God, no, this is not happening. And it happened. And it happened very quickly. But I had my wits about me. And I told the kid, I said, just keep that nozzle over our head like an umbrella. And I took that nozzle from his hand with him and opened the bale totally, and it just kept it right over our head. And I screamed into that radio, take the you-know-what windows, you know? And then as soon as they took the windows, I knew what was going to happen. The fire went out the windows, and then Adrian was talking about his gear, right? I still have that helmet. I think I don't know what I did with it, but you know, it was a plastic helmet, and it was black. I mean, the thing was incinerated. Everything was like practically incinerated. And I tell you what, I had a lot of sleepless nights over that because I felt that I was letting you guys down because you were relying on me to keep you safe. And, you know, I didn't do a good job at it. You know, I was reckless. You know, I tried to take on too much. And that's when I really started getting into FPA 1403. I took the class at Rockland County, and I'm very adamant about it. And I think I was talking to Sean earlier about, you know, the whole NFPA 1403. And I think, and I wish Sean DeCrane was on because I saw one of his videos on UL. And I think what's happening today, right, is that I don't think in the modern fire buildings, you know, with all the what's burning today, with the content, you know, it's all petrol-based and whatnot, that we no longer can replicate a live fire, right? It's just really impossible because they go to flash over so quick, and then they go into this decay stage, and then they flash again. And, you know, when I came on the job, I could tell you firsthand that many times I crawled down a hallway with the extinguisher in my hand and put out a room of fire with my can. And I don't think I'd be very surprised if I could do that today because the way these fires are going today. So I think what we need to look at when it comes to live fire is not so much trying to get people, you know, like let's get as much fire as we get and let's get a good fire. And, you know, let's work on our, it's like a football practice. Like let's work on our skills, you know, let's work on stretching hoses and stretches and searches and raising portables and forceful entry and communications and victim, whatever it is. And forget about trying to replicate a fire because I don't think that exists anymore. So I guess I'll ask Sean. So, Sean, what is your thoughts on live fire? Because I've gone 180 degrees now. They scare the hell out of me.
Yeah, so, you know, interesting discussion for sure. And I know back in the day when you guys had those incidents, that was really why 1403 was created, right? Was because people were doing different things all over the country. Even though it's still happening like that today, but things like diesel fuel and that kind of stuff was banned. So I'll just give you my experience from we've been doing live fire classes for I guess about the last. I don't know, COVID screws all that up, but 6 years or so at FDIC and me and a group of guys from Cobb County and another group of guys from Los Angeles County kind of set out to really do the best live fire training out there that you can in training structures with the materials that are legal within 1403, which is a wood-based product. And, you know, we love using OSB, and but the one thing about live fire training, and if you – both of the stories that I heard from you guys were uncontrolled fuel sets. And so we have a prescribed fuel set. Every single burn is the exact same fuel set. Every time the students get to see all of the students that come through, there is no, oh, it's the last burn of the day. That student's going to get a better show than the students in the first one because they all get the exact same fuel set. I think that that's the key is to live fire training is making sure that it's repeatable and that every student sees the exact same thing, because then once you kind of play with your fuel sets, figure it out, you kind of know what the thing can do, right? You know what's going to happen and the fire behavior that's going to occur. And so that's one of the things I think I've learned doing live fire training is that if you keep the fuel sets consistent, you'll know exactly how they're going to behave and you shouldn't get caught. But Danny, you also mentioned, you know, some of that muscle memory in that kid, the penciling thing. So Well, that's one thing that we use, and we kind of got beat up on social media for it when I posted about it, but TFT made us a nozzle. It's a 20 GPM nozzle, and we use that on all of our live fire burns. That's the nozzle that the students have. Now, we have safety lines in place, which are 150 GPM nozzles, and we have experienced live fire instructors sitting there on those nozzles watching the fire. But when the students come in, there's no penciling. They open up that nozzle, right? And they flow water the whole time, but it's only flowing 20 GPMs. So it's not going to knock down your fire. And it helps you with that muscle memory.
I had mentioned this at the Rock that we should do this. Yeah. I like that you said that. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's one thing for sure, is getting a low flow, low GPM nozzle to use just for live fire training. I think that's one of the keys, right? But, you know, we had an interesting discussion. Just flip it all, because you said it, you know, but what are we doing? Are we able to create environments that are close to what our real fire environment is? And it comes down to the exposure issues, right? Is that's what the big concern is. And even from the IFF, and I'm sorry that Sean's not here, but, you know, he would be able to speak on behalf of the IFF. You know, their concerns are is the cancer piece and the cancer reduction. Are we exposing ourselves to too many carcinogens and causing an increase in line of duty deaths from cancer? I think that you can't do live fire training and not there isn't exposure. If you look at all the UL-FSRI research that's out there, any materials that you use, they're all going to produce a carbon. They're all going to produce CO. They're all going to be a threat to our safety and health. So that at the advisory board meeting this year, Ray McCormick was there, and he's like, why not just start burning furniture then? Like, let's create real fire environments. If we're going to allow ourselves to burn, why are we – if wood is still bad and we're still having exposures, then why not just create real fires? And I think he's right. I mean, he brings up a valid point. If we are going to expose ourselves to the soot, and that's a decision that we – decided the best for the American Fire Service, which I think it is. I think we have to do live fire training. I just feel like that is a very valuable thing for people to say that we can't do it anymore because of cancer exposure or carcinogen exposure. I think we're going too far there. But yeah, Ray makes a very good point. I don't know if we'll ever go back to that this far outside of my reach, but you know, very valid point is, yeah, we can start burning furniture again. As long as it's a prescribed fuel set, you know, there's a guy in Indianapolis. I'm trying to think of his name. The guy that's got the whole training center and everything. Danny, what's that guy's name?
Jimmy McCormick.
So Jimmy McCormick, I've taken classes with him one time, and we had a discussion about 1403, and he would burn these foam cushions, seat cushions, right? And it was at the time 1403 said known burn characteristics. And he told me, he's like, I know what the burn characteristic of this seat cushion is. I know that I can put five of them in this burn, and exactly. And he was 100% right. He was doing prescribed burns, and he knew exactly what he could do with those seat cushions and did it safely for years. Never got anybody hurt. But then, you know, we got into only allowing wood-based products. And that's where some of the stuff comes from with the IFF is there's two different types of OSB. If you guys have been paying attention on social media, they were like talking about how OSB has been banned. That is not true. 1403, we actually, they put in a TIA and tried to get OSB banned altogether, and we voted that down. So you can still use OSB in live fire training. That's a misnomer that's out there about that. There's a certain type of OSB. In the study, it's called type B OSB, and that OSB is a green product that was purchased from some place in Canada. And some fire departments started buying this, what they thought was a greener, cleaner wood. The problem was it is cleaner when you build your house out of it. But once you burn it, it's encapsulated and has a much higher formaldehyde release. And it was like 20 times worse for you in the carcinogen world as far as exposure goes. So that number, that data set, some people got a hold of that and ran with it and went in comparison to the type A OSB, which is what you and I burn every single day. We buy it at Home Depot. That's the stuff we burn at FDIC. That stuff is no worse than pallets and hay. It's all the same across the board. So you just go back to look at what we're doing. And so there's still exposure threats. But that one type of OSB is what the bad data set that gave OSB a bad name. So, Danny, I think you guys are burning Jared Blake. You know him? He just made battalion chief with you guys with FDNY. Jared was running the burn chambers. Yeah, he was running the burn chamber down there at FDNY for a long time. And you guys started burning this stuff. It's a soundboard. And this soundboard, I like it. We burn it now in Cobb County. LA County burns it. FDNY burns it. It comes in a full bite sheet. The smoke is not as brown. It's made out of paraffin wax and sawdust, so it's a pressed board still. It's easier to clean up. Still gives you the same sort of rollover and all that kind of stuff that we see in the flashover, the flashover training simulators, that kind of stuff. But it works pretty good. I like it. It cleans up a little bit better. But I think that in the end, even right now, the current research is happening with training fires. They just did some burns last week. I think you're going to see the final data that's going to come out from that. That even the soundboard, it doesn't matter. It's still going to be a carcinogen risk. And so that's the decision we got to make as the American Fire Service. It's like, what are we willing to do? Are we willing to say no more live fire training because it's too much of an inherent risk for carcinogens? Or is it too much of an inherent risk to not do live fire training? Because, Danny, as you said earlier, man, we don't go to as many fires as we used to. You know, so I feel like we still have to be trained up on it and know what we're doing and how to operate safely.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, Jared, of course I know Jared. I mean, Jared, I brought Jared down to Ecuador a few times. So, you know, I used to go to Yankee games with Jared. But, you know, one thing that you mentioned about the rock, right? We have this, I thought it was ingenious, and I tried to get the guys in Ecuador to do this. We have a building that's concrete or brick, and then they add containers in the back, and they burn in the containers. I think it's ingenious because those containers, they're kind of disposable. But one of my biggest, I guess, complaints about live training, right, is that it just is so quick. Because if you're flowing a $150, right, you open the nozzle, it's over in about 30 seconds, right? So I had spoken to, I forget at the time, maybe Tommy Richardson. I said, why don't we get a nozzle, like, with a smaller tip on it that flows, like maybe 10% of that, you know? But at the same time, to comply with NFPA, we'll have right next to it a regular 1¾-inch with a, you know, 15-16 smooth bore ready to go. And this way, we give the, like you said, I love that, that you're still giving that firefighter the experience of going down a hallway and flowing water, but at the same time, we're not knocking the tar out of it in like 10 seconds. So I think
that's the way to go.
Really interesting. You know, I'll tell you an experience I had in Chile. And I was actually going to ask the guy to come on. He's in New York right now, and I was going to bring him on. But, you know, I've learned my lesson, right, with live burns. I've really had some, I hate to say, I've had some close calls, you know. And, you know, because you get a, you know, you're in Panama, you're Chile, Ecuador, wherever. And, you know, it's like all bets are off, right? I mean, you could just, like, no one's watching over you, you know, and you want to give these guys a good experience, right? And sometimes things just get a little sideways, you know. But I had learned, and what had happened was we had gotten a quiet structure. It was a, I guess we call it a type one, right? It's fireproof. And the guy that was giving us the building, right, he wanted to take the floors out, right? He wanted to recycle the floors, right? So I'm like, all right, whatever. So he's recycling the floors, right? What happened, though, is that these little brats, right, they're like maybe like an eighth of an inch, and there's like these little cleats all over the floor, right? So anyway, I get my scenario going. We got a living room fire. We got an engine. We have a truck. We have the whole thing going, ready to go. But I said, listen, this is what we're going to do. We're going to get an engine company. I want four firefighters, an officer and three firefighters on the line in the room with a charged tan line, right? Okay, no problem, chief, whatever. So we start the drill. They light it up. And they drag the hose, and what do you think happens? Those little nails, brats, whatever you want to call them, punctured the hose, and we had a burst length.
And I have to tell you, it was like it was a non-issue. Like, they were freaking out because the burst length and the water is, like, pissing everywhere. And I just was standing right there. I was like, just open the line. And it was right there. They were camped out in the other room, ready to go. And that's only as a result of learning the hard way, you know, like that safety line. Because I'd even go as far today to say if I was going to do a live burn in a Type 5 structure, I would put a line by the windows. And if things go sideways, I'd have one inside and I'd have one outside. Because it's just, man, oh, man, it's just the potential for things to go sideways. It's too great. I've seen it too many times now. But I agree with you, Sean. You know, we have to do these live burns. How are we going to train our firefighters, right? I mean, we can't have a firefighter go into his first fire being his first fire. I mean, like, he really should have some sort of wherewithal of what's happening. You know, what's going to happen, what to predict, whatever. Because, you know, it takes a long time to develop these skills, right?
Yep.
When I came on the job, they told me that it would take 5 years to learn the job. And that was in 1986, right? And we were going to, you know, a few fires a week. You know, I can't even imagine what it'd be like now. I know there's some kids, you know, they don't go to a fire for like a month at a time. It's just the reality of it, you know? So how else are we going to teach firefighters the skills, right? So, yeah, I think we have to continue with doing our live burns, without a doubt.
Yeah, I agree with you. And, you know, again, Sean DeGrain not being on here with us, I think that he'll agree as well that there's an inherent safety risk for firefighters by not doing live fire training. And we just have to kind of continue. We got to figure out the balance, find the balance, and keep doing what we've been doing, just keep people safe. To me, it's to get somebody hurt in a training burn is just you're doing something wrong, right? You're letting something get away. And Danny, I was in Nigeria and burned tires too. So even a guy like me who sits on 14, we all do it. You know what I mean? It's one of those things. So, but yeah, yeah. It's just so valuable and important. And the kids that come through our class at FEIC, man, they leave there. And I remember, you know, we burned up a few shields and stuff this year, and I felt really bad about it. I was like, you know, like, oh, man, I'm so sorry. No, man, this is awesome. I felt terrible. I was offering to buy people shields. Like, oh, let me replace your shield for you, you know. But you know, we give them a good show, and in the end, they, you know, they get a good class. But that burst line issue that you talked about, we actually had a burst line happen this year at FDIC on us. It's the first time it's ever happened. And the hose line melted, and we just had a lot of heat coming out of the backside of the box, and it was our safety line that ended up popping and bursting. And but we had – the kid was in there, had a nozzle. I was with him, just told him to open up that 20 GPM nozzle all the way, put it on the base of the fire, and then just called. We actually had another backup line on that floor outside with an interior safety that sits in the outside hallway outside the burn room, and he brought his line in, and no problem. We were – you know, everything was fine. But having those backup lines in place is key, you know. And controlling your ventilation openings. Like you talked about those stories I heard earlier. I heard about every one of those stories where things got out of control, there was an uncontrolled ventilation opening, right? So they've been in an acquired structure. If you plug up your windows with OSB, you can control them. That's the thing, is you got to have controlled ventilation openings. When things get uncontrolled or if there's wind involved, and that really changes the dynamics of what's occurring in live fire training. That's how you get people hurt. And that's why I preach the fire dynamics pieces, is that knowing and understanding fire dynamics makes you such a better firefighter. I mean, smarter, safer, just know the job even more. And having somebody around with a lot of fire dynamic knowledge on your burns is even more of a key, you know, rather than people toss it on one more pallet. Ah, we'll just throw one more on. That's what gets you in trouble every time. That's where it goes sideways.
Oh, yeah. Carl, let me ask you, as a training officer in Connecticut, in Ellington, do you still do a lot of live burns in Connecticut, or have you shied away from it?
So we're fortunate enough. We got a federal grant probably pushing close to 20 years ago now for a live burn trailer. So it's a propane-based system. So it's clean, relatively. It's efficient, easy setup, easy breakdown. So we use that thing a lot because it's available, it's accessible. But as I'm sure you guys obviously understand, it's very limited in what you can do with it and how realistic it is as well. So in addition to probably, I don't know, half a dozen training sessions with that a year, we typically go to one of the fire training schools. There's 9 in Connecticut that have some version of live burn, different types of systems. But there's a brand new one in Willimantic close to us, so we try to go there once or twice a year to get a little bit of a different feel towards live fire. But again, to your point, it has some things that are better, that are more realistic, but other things lacking. So, you know, to what you guys were saying earlier, we're doing the best we can to show people what it's really like. It's just, it's very hard to be safe, be compliant, follow NFPA, and provide realistic training as best as we can.
Yeah, I'm trying to think back now, like when I first came on the job. And I remember going to the fire academy, and I thought it was a big deal. Just they did like a barrel with like some I don't know. It wasn't even hay. It was just like a few 2x4s. And I, geez, to me that was like, man, oh man, you know. And you know, now you know, we have these, I guess we'll call them Class B burns in the rock. They're propane, I believe. And I have to tell you, I gave them a compliment. I was like, this is very realistic. You know, they set up the pan, right, I guess, and the jets, it's like an oven or a stove, and if you hit right. To cool the pan down. And I remember thinking to myself, this is probably some of the most realistic, you know, live burns I've ever done. And I had done tons of them. I mean, God, I used to do 6 a day when I was in Ecuador, like for a week straight. You know what I mean? It would just be nonstop. And I thought that these, you know, and I'm not a big fan of the propane initially, but I have to tell you, I walked away. I'm like, you know what? What are we trying to accomplish here, right? We want to expose firefighters to, you know, fire, right? We want them to see the red devil, you know, get used to the heat, you know, control their breathing and not panic, right? So we don't really have to burn the house down. You know, I used to think we had to do that to have a good burn. That was my thinking. Like, we have to, the more the better, right? So, and just pile them on, you know, tires. I remember one time me and Buckeye were in Lima, Peru, and we were live on the national news because we had lit up a vacant high rise, and we had, like, fire out, like, 10 windows, you know? And I was proud of myself. I was like, look, I told John, I was like, check this out. But, you know, we don't have to do that. We really don't. Just, you know, I really wish Sean was here because I love what he says in one of the UL videos that he does. He talks about, you know, like just working on our skills, you know, like stretching the hose and throwing the ladders up and communication and just getting that muscle memory down because the other stuff will come. You know, once you open that nozzle, the party's over anyway. It doesn't matter. So, but it's all the stuff that gets up to it, you know, doing a good stretch. Like I had a job the other night. And I was really so proud. It wasn't much of a fire. It was like one room, but like 82 engine, 94 stretches line. And it was like, man, they did such a good job, man. It was like no kinks. It was like, it was perfect. It was like one of the best stretches I've seen in a long time. And it was a long stretch because the first hydrant was dead, so they had to go up the block and had to be at least 10 lengths, you know. And I told them all. I said, guys, I told the captain, I said, this was a fantastic stretch, man. Because you know what? They practice it, you know, and that other stuff will come. You know, when you pop the door and, you know, you're making your way down the hallway, you open the nozzle, the fire's going to go out. You put the water on the fire, it's going to go out. But it's getting to that point. That's where the money's at, right? So, Aiden, how about yourself now? Are you still doing any more live burns? Have you felt like a little gun-shy since that happened?
So
I didn't really realize the, like, again, I'm still relatively new. I've only been doing it for probably 3.5 years. I have not a huge track record. And of course, the volunteer service, it's volunteer. I'm not necessarily there 24/7. It happens that anytime I'm hanging out there, no fires ever actually happen. Just my luck, I guess. But I wasn't really aware of the danger I was in at the time. And that's no fault of any of my instructors at all. It was just I've never experienced anything like that before, so it was new to me. And I'm sure everyone has their own little story of their close call, but that was just something I didn't really know that I was in danger. And I kind of realized that after I was taking off all my stuff, obviously I was like, wow, it was a hot fire, obviously, because I was just a new guy and trying to act cool and everything. And I was looking down, I was like, oh, like, why is my gear kind of melted? And then, like, I showed one of my instructors, like, training officers, and they were like, when did that happen? They were like, was that, like, sometime today? I was like, I don't know, it was the last fire. They were like, they were just, like, amazed. They didn't even realize it happened either. Just because the doorway I went in was kind of tucked away in that video. It's not really easy to see exactly what happened there. And I was just looking over my gear. I noticed my mask was all crystallized. I know you had mentioned earlier you burned up a plastic lid. I borrowed a plastic lid from my station, so I didn't want to mess up my nice helmet at the time. So I was very fortunate I did that. Yeah, my plastic lid was all burnt up as well. But Delaware, we have a burn ban from May to October. So we're not, no one in the state is allowed to burn at all until October. But we do have some more lined up for the upcoming winter months that I'm not necessarily scared about, but I'm kind of fortunate that it did happen just so I can recognize it from both the outside. It's great that there's somebody took a video of the outside so I can now see, I kind of can see what happens on both sides of the fire scene. And it makes it, yeah. I think it was a really good learning experience for myself just to be able to see from both the inside and the outside so that I at least have some experience for the real world if that day ever does come.
Yeah. So I don't want to listen. Don't feel like, you know, there's something wrong if you're a little nervous, because I'll be honest with you. Back in 86, I was caught in 2 flashovers within 2 months, and you talk about ignorance is bliss. I really didn't know what was going on, because you have to picture that the gear that we were wearing back at the time was rubber boots that only came up to your hip, you know, and half the time we didn't even roll them up. Then we had a coat. Yep. That came down, and you had this, like, gap between your knee and your thigh, right? And then we didn't have hoods, so our coat basically sometimes we didn't even buckle the top collar, so our necks were exposed. So, like, I don't know, like, you don't go as deep. I remember, like, you'd get in, and you'd be like, your ears would be burning off because it was so hot, because you didn't have a hood. You'd put your flaps down, but that wouldn't do anything because the heat would just get up under the flaps anyway. So, in a sense, it's a double-edged sword, because the gear that we had, even though I was involved in 2 flashovers, wouldn't have protected me like the gear today, but you're not going to go in blindly and in deep, because that's what worries me, right? So we have probies today, we have young firefighters that they'll put their hoods on, they'll put their flaps down, their gloves, the bunker gear, the collar is up, the mask is on, they go into a hostile environment, and they're in 20, 25 feet, and they're really oblivious because they're not feeling the heat, you know? Like, I had a friend of mine, George, we did a live burn down in Miami, and again, it's always happened at the end of the day, and the container got really hot. I mean, it was just at the end of the day, so it was after, like, probably 6 burns, right? And we were doing 1403, by the way. We were following all the precautions. And
sure, of course.
When we got back to his station and he started changing his clothes, I look at his shoulder, and he had this massive second-degree burn on his shoulder. He didn't even know it, you know. And just as a plug, I want to really encourage firefighters not to wear any kind of nylon or poly shirts. Like, I know the dry fits are comfortable, and, you know, sometimes it gets hot, but do not wear them underneath your bunker gear, because God forbid something happens, you're not going to want to have to deal with that. Trust me. So thank God he was wearing a cotton shirt, but he had quite a burn on his shoulder, and he didn't even feel it, you know? because our gear is that good. So that's what kind of worries me. But it took me, I'll be honest, I look back on it, and after those two flashovers, I was a little gun-shy. It took me a while to get back on the horse, you know, because, you know, I'm thinking, like, every time I'm going down a hallway now, this thing's going to flash over on me, right? So this is all normal stuff, right? So, you know, just trust in your training. And the other thing is just stay with the nozzle. Just keep it open. You never go wrong.
Yep.
So, anyway.
Yeah, being nervous is good, you know, and I feel like being nervous, even with as much fire dynamics knowledge and experience that I have, is I just had a fire right before the New York trip, Dan, when I was up there for the battery thing, 2 days before that. My very first McMansion fire. I'd never been on a large open space hall. This place was like between 8,000 and 9,000 square feet. And pulled up, had light smoke showing, didn't seem like that big of a deal. We popped the front doors, and it's these two big doors. They're like 8 foot tall doors, and they open up, and it is all the way to the floor, and there's like a clear, it's kind of sucking in. It is like there was no exchange. It wasn't bidirectional flow at the front door. It was a full intake. So I look at that thing, and I'm like, I'm nervous. But my guys, they're ready to go. I think we got a line, we're ready to go. They're going to search them. We got reports of a person trapped. So that, you know, they're getting ready to hit the stairs, but it is blacked out at the front door. And I'm like,
right.
Get somebody to check the basement again. I'd already checked it on my initial walk around. We were the first Duke, and I'd already checked it. There's nothing in the basement. I didn't see anything in the basement, but man, it'd be that neutral plane so low like that. But what it was is it had 25 foot ceilings. So it was just circulating. It was like a warehouse fire, you know, just big open space, just circulating. And but my guys got in there and got it quick, you know, got in there. It was a whole kitchen. The living room was going, had two rooms going, and they did a good job. And did find a victim behind a closed door. He's in there unconscious on a bed. But so it all worked out. It was a good fire, but I'd be lying to you if I didn't tell you that I was definitely nervous on that one, you know. And the kids that were with me, I don't think that they knew any better. They were just like, yeah, all right, come on, let's go. I was like, hold on.
Ignorance is bliss.
Exactly, yeah, for sure, you know. Yeah, that one made me a little nervous, man, you know, because it looked just like a warehouse fire to me. And, so I actually even called Dan Madrikowski the next day because we've been talking about, with all the UL stuff, trying to burn some bigger homes like that or things that have large open spaces. We don't understand what our hose streams are doing in those large spaces yet. And that's kind of like some upcoming research that we've talked about, is trying to see what we can do in large open spaces. Because your water, if I flow water at the front door in that place, I can't even see the ceiling. So where's it going? Like, what are my water droplets doing? They're just going off into oblivion at that point, you know? So it might really be a waste of water at the front door, flowing water up into a big space like that. So, just trying to understand some of those things in the future. But, so nervous is good. Take that advice. I promise you it's good, because it made me step back and go, maybe I missed something, you know?
Yeah. But, you know, it's funny to say that, because I live up in Putnam County, which is like a, you know, kind of a rural suburban area. And tons of McMansions. And I asked the volleys one time, I said, would you still stretch an inch and a half or an inch and three quarter, or would you think about a 2.5? Because, you know, my rule of thumb is balance, right? Defensive, advanced fire, large, uncompartmented areas, you know, that's, you know, a size unknown. I would say a 2.5. So maybe that's something that might be coming, you know, for these McMansions. Because you don't have to worry about... See, I remember one time we had a job. I was in a squad, actually. And we had a 2.5 when we were hitting the exposure. And then the next thing you know, Chief wants the line in the building. And you couldn't move it. I was with Bobby Athanas, I remember. And we could not move the 2.5 in this little, like, row frame. But these McMansions are wide open, man. So why not? Bring the big stuff, you know. Knock out a lot of fire with it, that's for sure. You know, so, you know, Sean, you're reminding me of a quick story. When I was in 58 Engine, we had a job on Lenox and 116th Street, and it was a H-type, and the first floor apartment had been converted into an apartment from a store, and it had 12-foot ceiling. And I talk about being nervous, right? I remember going in and thinking, like, I'm so used to finding a fire. Like, you know, like, I'm going to go in, going about 10 feet, whatever, I'm going to see the glow, you know? I couldn't find it. And I'm thinking to myself, like, oh, man. There was a guy that was on the vent, and I wasn't too happy with him, you know, because he just was a little careless, you know. And I'm thinking to myself, if he takes these windows without asking, I'm dead, you know. And then out of the corner of my eye, I was down probably about 20 feet, and then I saw the corner of my eye, the fire's behind me. And but it was those 20-foot, you know, those 12-foot ceilings. You know, you don't feel the heat. And I remember I was at the door. I'll never forget this. And the smoke was coming, was drawing into the apartment. And I was like, why is it doing that? You know, like, this is, like, not a good sign. So, yeah, nervousness is good. If, you know, I used to talk to my old captain when I was covering a lot in 42 Engine, and he said to me, he said, Danny, he says, if you're not scared, then you're not really doing the job. You know?
Sure.
That's how he used to, you know, Tommy Finn, he used to, that's how, that was his barometer, if it was a good fire, because he said to me, like, I said, yeah, Tommy, we caught a job last night, and he just said, were you scared? I said, no, not really. He says, then it don't count. And if anybody's ever told you that, and if anybody's ever said to you, like, they've never been scared of a fire, then I question whether they've really ever been to a fire, because
that's a lie.
I've been scared lots of times. So that's another show for another time. But anyway, guys, listen, we've been into this an hour already. I'm sorry Sean didn't show up, but I appreciate you all being here. As you say in the South, y'all been here. A year ago, Carl and I were on our bikes coming up from the South. And how many times did we hear y'all, right, Carl?
That's right. Long ride from Florida.
Who's this guy, y'all? Anyway,
yes, sir.
Listen, so no scooters this year in Indy, okay, please? And take a Uber.
No, I'm walking this year. Yep. Yeah, I'm going to walk it. So. But
and,
hey, real quick, since you just brought up y'all, I just want to make note of a guy that's really kind of turning the live fire stuff on upside down, especially with acquired structures. There's a kid named Jason Joannidis, and he teaches at FDIC, but he is the man when it comes to acquired structure burns and the paperwork that goes with them and how to set it up, how to find the structures. This guy's trying to put together a program in South Carolina, North Carolina, and, man, the guy's phenomenal. He's really dialed. So for all the people that listen to this, look up Jason Joannidis, friend him on social media, because he's definitely a dialed individual when it comes into exactly what should be going on when it comes to the paperwork and how to get the buildings and the ownership of it. He just burned a huge farmhouse, just like you mentioned earlier. I saw probably a month ago now, he burned it up, and he's been working on this thing for like a year, but he's doing it right, doing the way that we should be doing with acquired structure burns, and hopefully people can follow in his footsteps and learn from him.
Very cool. All right, well, guys, listen, we're out of time, so look him up if you want, and if you want to look at the video, I'm going to post the other video from that live fire if you're interested in it, and, you know, just if you're going to do these live burns, I really, really strongly, strongly advocate that you follow the 1403 and don't cowboy it, because I've cowboyed it a few times, and, you know, I'm very lucky that I'm here to still talk about it. So thank you for showing up. And without further ado, I'm gonna sign off. Guys, I'll see you whenever. Aiden, thank you for being here. Carl, I think
you're
already gone. I'm not sure.
No,
yeah, Sean is gone. So, okay. Are you still? Someone dropped. 6, 7, 8. All right. Okay. Another list. Guys, see you at FDIC. Carl, I'll see you whenever. And
on a bike ride soon, huh?
Yeah, that's right. All
Thank
right,
you.
Guys. All right, guys.
Thanks.
Ciao, ciao. Bye-bye. Thanks. Bye.
Bye-bye.